Welcome to Awaken Calls. Every Saturday, we host conversations with guest speakers from all walks of life. Speakers whose personal journeys awaken and inspire our innate spirit of service. Thank you for coming together to plant seeds for a more compassionate society.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, depending on the part of the world that you're calling in from. My name is Amit Dungrani, and I'm really excited to be your host for this week's Global Awakening Call. Now, every story is the beginning of a conversation, and whether it's with ourselves or with others, across time and culture, stories have been the agents of personal transformation, in part because they have the power to change our hearts and minds. The purpose of our weekly calls are to share stories from the lives of incredible changemakers from around the world. Through thoughtfully guided conversations with them, our guest speakers share their personal stories and inspire us through their actions, their experiences, and their insights. Our hope is that these conversations will plant seeds for a more compassionate and service-oriented society while serving to foster our own inner transformation. Behind each of these calls is an entire team of service-based volunteers whose invisible work allows us to hold this beautiful space. We're thankful to them and to all of our listeners for helping co-create this call. Today, we're grateful to have a remarkable guest speaker with us, Maya Brewer, whose personal story, passion, and beauty to the way that she approaches life has had a tremendous impact on so many people. We thank you again for joining today's call. As we do each week, let's start with a moment of silence to anchor ourselves into this space. A moment of silence, please. Thank you. So welcome again to our weekly Awaken Call, today in conversation with Maya Brewer. Here's how today's call will work. In a few minutes, our lovely moderator for today, Angela, will introduce Maya and engage in a dialogue with her. And then at the top of the hour, we'll roll into a Q&A and a circle of sharing where we'll invite all of you to share your questions and reflections. Our theme or title for this week's call is to listen to spirit and take action. We are grateful to have Angela Montano as our moderator today. For those of you that don't know her, she's an international spiritual coach and prayer counselor devoted to sharing the utterly transformative power of prayer. Her work provides spiritual insights that change the way people perceive their circumstances, creating a shift that opens up a whole new world of possibilities. In many ways, Angela's work seems to complement the work that Maya is doing. Maya has devoted her life and her work to take action to serve her community and the greater good through healing the mind, body, and spirit, so we can position ourselves to serve others. We're asking our callers this week to reflect on the theme question, how are you being called by spirit to take action? And what is the community that you seek to serve? So Angela, please feel free to share your reflections and have your answer lead right into an introduction of Maya and the opening of your conversation with her.
Thank you so much, Amit, and hello everyone. And I'm so excited about this gathering that we're getting to be present for. And as I was, you know, doing my research and gathering all these amazing facts about Maya and her contribution to the world, a story came to mind. And it's the story of three monks. These three monks are off on a search for nirvana. And one monk comes to a wall and he climbs the wall, he looks over, and lo and behold, there is nirvana. It's love, peace, joy, harmony, and he just dives in and he is enjoying nirvana. Now, the second monk eventually gets there. He also climbs the wall and gets up and looks over and sees it. But instead of jumping in, he calls to the third monk, this way, come this way. So that third monk comes up, and when the second monk sees the third monk climbing up the wall, he goes ahead and jumps over. So the third monk makes it to the top of the wall and sees nirvana, sees the peace, sees the joy, sees the harmony. And then he climbs back down. And the second and the first monk are like, hey, where are you going? Where are you going? And he said, I'm going back to get everybody else. And that story, to me, personifies Maya Brewer. She has made her life's work about going back and fetching the others, fetching her community, fetching the rest of us. And the list of accomplishments of hers are quite impressive. Maya Brower is a yogi. She is the founder and creator of the yoga retreat for women of color that is offered annually at the Krupala Center of Yoga. And that is a retreat that has been occurring for the past 20 years. She is also president and co-founder of the National Black Yoga Teachers Alliance. That's a nonprofit created to support and provide opportunities for black yoga teachers. In addition to that, she is founder and director of the Santosha School of Yoga, and that's based in Providence, Rhode Island, where she lives. And she has a powerful mission of teaching the practice and the philosophy of yoga to renew spirit and achieve positive outcomes for healthy living. Her work has been published in Yoga Journal Magazine, the Philadelphia Inquirer, Ebony, shaken by the deaths in recent years due to violence and especially police violence within the black community. Maya has now also co-created an initiative titled Yoga as a Peace Practice. And this was launched just in May of this year in Oakland, California, and will be in Massachusetts and Brooklyn later in this year. And this is just some of the many things she's done. So this fascinating inquiry we have today, how are we being called by spirit and how to take action? This, her motto is listen to spirit and take action. So I welcome you, Maya. Thank you so much for being here. And I want to start off with your talking to us about listening to a dream you had and how that began your journey. I was just reading Lynn Twist's book, The Soul of Money, this week. And in that story, she tells the story about these Bangladesh women in this community who have a dream that there is an underground lake. And in the society that these women live in, they don't speak at community meetings. And through a series of circumstances, Lynn is able to meet with these women alone who speak about the dream they had. And the men did not want them to dig for the lake because they didn't want the women doing that work and they didn't believe the lake was there. But Lynn Twist was able, and her group was able, to convince the men to allow them, the women, to dig. They dug for the lake, and it was there. And it all came from a dream they had. And you had a dream. You had a dream you were visited by your grandmother in a dream. And I'm just wondering if you might start there and tell us about that to start our conversation.
Sure, and thank you so much, Angela, for introducing me and welcoming me. Well, this dream, which I think really was the touchstone or the beginning of me moving through life, was after I had traveled to India and studied there for several months, I was trying to figure out what steps I would take to be a part of the world or to, you know, use all that I had learned about yoga and meditation and self-love and self-awareness. And in a dream, my grandmother, who was she was a woman's woman. You know, she loved to cook, she loved child rearing, she loved her church community. And, you know, she came to me. She actually sat on my bed and she said, you know, be you, you know, teach women, look at the women. Or she said something like, look at the women. And from that, I began to look at how women like me were so challenged. And at that time, I was living in Rhode Island, and I have three children who are two are adults now. One has passed, but you know, it's looking at the challenges of living. You know, how do I integrate all of these wonderful things into my daily life? And now that, like the story about the monk, it really was that feeling within me. Now that I've got this down, how can I sort of reach back and share it with others? And I, you know, I had long been studying at Kripalu and doing seva there, and I was initiated at that yoga ashram also by Amrit Desai when he was there. You know, so Kripalu seemed like just the place for me to really try to bring something together. Although I started right in my town, just having women come to breathe, to do yoga, to move their spirits, to have share circles. But it all did start with a very simple dream, which was so like my grandmother. There was no hoopla, no craziness. She just came in, sat down. And I just knew that she was telling me what to do. And so my work began with women who looked like me, and that was African American women. And it broadened out to women of color.
So how did you come to yoga in the first place? Because I'm getting the feeling from things I've read that you kind of looked around the room and you didn't see other people who did look like you in the yoga circle.
Well, that was that's yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, how did you come to yoga?
Well, I started yoga, it was about 30 years ago, maybe a little more, and there were challenges in my life. I had a brother who had been diagnosed with the AIDS virus, and I had another brother who was very challenged with his life, and I had been diagnosed with cancer, and I was just simply, everything was spinning around me, and a friend of mine said, you need to go on a retreat. I had no idea what a retreat was. I'd never heard that word except in terms of backing away from something, but I didn't have any awareness of it as like a time to rest, renew, and relax. And I took her up on the idea and explored Kripalu. Then I went there. And it actually was my second experience with yoga, but something shifted within me, and I felt like my heart was open. I was actually in a position called Bhujangasana, the cobra, when I had this experience of feeling, this is exactly what I need. And I started practicing that day, and I have been pretty focused and dedicated to my own personal sadhana since then.
Well, that was a very radical move, isn't it? You know, everything, you've got the three children, you're caring for your brother with the AIDS virus, you've been diagnosed with cancer, and to choose to go on a retreat, that's such an opening, especially when you said you barely even related to that word at the time, you know?
No, I didn't. I didn't know. I knew retreat only as backing away or backing up. I had never really known about people doing things like going on retreats. Hate to express my ignorance, but it wasn't in my community. We didn't talk about that. You know, so when I got into the world of yoga, it took me several years because I was helping my brother for several years while he was very ill. He did pass away. And I got myself healthy and strong, but through that whole time, I'm doing yoga, and I'm going to my brother was in California, so I became bi-coastal, spending more of my time in California with him than in Rhode Island, and I'm bringing him crystals, and I'm chanting, and my brother was a physician, And he really was of another mind and thought that what I was doing was pretty out there. But, once everything calmed down and I was well, and this was a few years, I was then able to explore yoga more in depth and study it so that it would nourish me while I went through the grief and continue to, raise my children and now I'm teaching, so I'm teaching a little bit here, a little bit there, but everywhere I go, there are no people who look like me. That was what it was like when I started.
And that feeling of no people looking like you, can you describe that, like what that's like in a room where no one looks like you? And how did you get from whatever that feeling was to wanting to affect change?
Well, it was just, I was aware of all the challenges that my people had in terms of health. And I could just look at people in my family and my church community who suffered with hypertension and diabetes and obesity and different maladies. And I knew from my studies and my own experience that my body was becoming whole. I was not having the issues that I had prior to the yoga. And I felt this would be valuable for Black people to learn yoga. But there were many, many years when I couldn't get them to listen to me either because it seemed very out there, this practice.
And what kind
that,
of reactions would you get?
Well, I would get people being very resistant, downright refusing, to participate in something I'd offered. Or several times I was called to speak at different events and, church events, and people were upset that I was chanting Om. And, it was very challenging in the earlier years. And I nourished myself with my spirit. I used the yoga, the tenets of yoga, the practices of yoga, the breath. I learned to nourish myself. So even though I didn't see people who looked like me, and people didn't respond to me in a very positive way, spirit kept me going because I felt there was something. There was a knowledge that I needed. There was an experience that I needed to make myself whole. And then as I was getting whole, I knew I had to share everything that I had learned. And it took some time.
Yes. It's so interesting. And I think many people on the call can relate to this. Like, you've had something that will serve and help others. And whether your knowledge relates to being of service to planet Earth, related to the environment, or social justice, or whatever your service is, that gap between what you sense will be of value to another, and then enrolling others to experience it, to see for themselves, it takes a great amount of fortitude for that. And I get the feeling as you talk, some part of you knew you were on your path. Is that true or false?
I think it's sort of true. Part of it is, but I think my awareness of self and my awareness of my path has been revealed to me as I move through life. And I also had the support of yoga and the way it manifested here.
And tell me more about that.
Meaning, you know, when I started, you know, 30-something years ago, people thought I had lost my mind. You know, why are you doing this yoga? What is it? It's very strange. Then yoga became popular. Mm-hmm. You know, so say over a decade, I'm still, you know, banging on doors, trying to get people of color and African-American people to become involved and become aware. And then there was a shift in our culture, and people began to understand that this was a helpful practice for health and well-being. And studies began to be done. So it was like I had a wind. I got lifted by life, you know, by people's awareness, by the media, by everyone saying, oh, yoga, yoga, yoga. And so it opened opportunities and doors for me to stand in my yoga.
Right. So it helped that your community was hearing yoga from other voices and said, oh, that's what Maya's been telling us about.
Yeah, it was like they were now open to it. But you know, it's been an amazingly slow process, you know, getting to the place from where I see no black people in yoga, or really people of color for that matter, to a place where we hold a conference and have used the largest space at Kripalu, which is their main, they used to call it the main chapel, because we have so many people in attendance who are black yoga teachers. You know, so it's quite a journey for my spirit to look and say, oh my goodness, look at this.
Yeah. And the idea that this yoga retreat for women of color has been going on for now 20 years. It's well established. Like you said, you're using the bigger space. You know, I've heard it said that people overestimate what they can get done in a year, but they underestimate what they can get done in a decade. So how, you know, I want to know, like, what can you speak to, what kept you going? Because like you said, it was so slow. You know, people thought you were crazy. You know, this is so out there. Why are you oming in church? You know, what can you tell us to help us have that kind of, I almost want to use the word backbone, you know, or that, you know, where we stand, you know, for our purpose in that way. What can you, like, can you speak to what supported you to keep going?
I think it's the way I was raised. I was raised with my grandparents, and we were in a Hebrew family. We were very religious, and I had a deep, and I still do, I have a deep sense in that, you know, God is, and that I'm supported, and that I can stand in my truth. So once it's revealed to me, then I have strength. You know, and that is not to say that, oh, everything has been perfect and it goes perfectly along. No, I'm not saying that. But I think it's my strength, my awareness, my experience with yoga. You know, my body's been my laboratory, and my ability to still my mind and be able to focus. All of those are, you know, treasures that come from practicing yoga and being conscious and aware of your breath. So we've got this tapestry happening now. So now the culture shifts and people are wanting yoga. You know, I'm standing in my truth and allowing myself to learn more, to practice more. And those, that's the combination, the spirit that helped me say, oh, well, let's do this. Let's try this.
Beautiful. I find that really an interesting statement. God is, I am supported. So for people who don't relate to that word God, it for some people, just even the word, you know, is off-putting. You know, different people have different negative experiences through religion. I hear you also use the word spirit. Like, if you had to use other words, how would you describe that which convinces you are supported? You know, because if we know we're supported in the work we're called to do, chances are we'll continue it even when it's challenging. So how does one tap into support in the inner realms as you're describing it?
You know, I don't know if one can overtly tap into it, but I think if one could, it would be through the breath. You know, if I like to say God is, but really breath is, spirit is. So those people who are uncomfortable with God, if they can believe in the energy of their life and stand in that, you know, but it's very challenging for people who have no foundation. And I think one of the things that yoga can do, if you practice just a little, it can begin to calm and center and enable you to see what you need to stand for and what you need to walk away from. You know, so you can substitute any word that pleases you. Earth is, life is, breath is, and let that be your platform.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't have to be God. You know, I think, you know, if the whole thing goes both down to practice. You have to have a practice in order to have life flowing. You know, for me, that practice is breathing and yoga and meditation. And now my practice also is Nana Yoga, which is the study of yoga philosophy. And all of those things keep me taking small steps on this path or my life and my dharma, which is, you know, sharing this experience that I've had to make myself whole.
Beautiful. I love the phrase, believe in the energy of your own life, because when I hear that and I think about the energy of my own life, I know it's more than I can think. You know, it's more than my limited idea of my life. You know, the energy of my own life. You know, I'm not making my heart beat right now thinking it. You know, it's just happening. And so I think that's very powerful. And when you say practice breathing, and we're always breathing or we wouldn't be sustaining life, what do you mean by practice breathing?
Well, you know, we breathe and it's an involuntary action. But if we're conscious of our breath and we are inhaling and taking in breath and then allowing ourselves to release the breath, it gives you a sense of peace and calm and meditation. Inherent in the breath is a meditation that was given to everyone. So when I take a breath in, I am saying a sort of like a little prayer, soul. And when I exhale, I'm saying hum, and that is sort of a gift to everyone. If people can be conscious that breath is a gift, and we stay aware of the in-breath and the out-breath as a practice, because you can't walk around every day count, you know, oh my Lord, I got breath, and I'm going in, I'm going out. I'm not referring to that. But taking a few minutes to sit and be still and follow the in-breath and the out-breath really helps to center and ground one.
Beautiful. And so you're saying on the in-breath, we might say to ourselves within, so, breathing in, and on the out-breath,
yes, ha.
And that might be a ha. And that might be a simple breath practice that someone listening could do right now or today that would serve them in quieting themselves to listen to spirit, which is what your motto is, listen to spirit and take action.
Absolutely. You know, it's the other thing is, you know, once you get that deep calm and that centeredness, you know, the action can be just like going in the room and cleaning your kitchen. You know,
right.
Maybe that's something that you need to do. The action may be, you know, taking care of something that has to be done, you know. It's not always an altruistic or a big action. You know, care of the self is the action. You know, once we take care of ourselves, then we're able to move. And most people, you know, when we grow up, we're not really taught about self. We're taught about cleanliness and doing things like that, but we're not talking about the self as a body of spirit. But just through awareness of the breath, through a simple yoga practice, that will help one to be in spirit.
Yes. You know, I'm so moved by your work with both the retreat, the annual retreat, the yoga retreat for women of color offered through Kruprala, your Black Yoga Teachers Alliance, serving your community, your yoga studio, your school in Providence. And I'm wanting to turn our attention to the yoga as a peace practice, this initiative that you've begun, and you know, really inspired by your own, I guess I'm going to call it pain, related to the violence within the Black community, especially police violence. And tell me about this initiative and how we can be part of it and what it is.
Yes, certainly. The Yoga as a Peace Practice is the first initiative of the Black Yoga Teachers Alliance. Mm. And it came about, my partner and co-creator of the Black Yoga Teachers Alliance is Jana Long. And it came with us talking just about the violence, you know, and the fact that no one is doing anything about the aftermath of violence. Mm-hmm. What happens to people after the loss of a loved one? What happens in the community when there's been two or three, four shootings? What happens to the people who have to live there and go to work and go to sleep, etc.? So yoga as a peace practice is an intervention for those people. And the intervention is to address the impact and the trauma that people go through with violence, and to address it with the contemplative practice of yoga, not just yoga postures or movements or sun salutations, but actually to look at some of those things that are never taught in the world today regarding yoga. So what we've done is made that part of the Black Yoga Teachers Initiative, and we started with funding from the Urban Family Foundation to offer a training in, we picked Oakland as our pilot city, and we were there in May at the Oakland Hub, Impact Oakland Hub. And we offered a training to teach people these different practices that they can integrate either into their personal lives, share with their families, but more importantly, one of our objectives is to reach yoga teachers so that they can incorporate this into their teachings when they're teaching communities where there has been violence.
This is so powerful because I have heard that much of the violence that occurs in our world is the result of untreated trauma in people's lives. That the violence is an unmet need from a prior trauma, and if that trauma can be treated, also not only is there healing for those who are victims of violence, you know, hopefully there's a prevention of future violence.
Well, I think that's very true. And with our objective, it is to really give people, get them started on a journey that is more self-reflective and introspective, and teach how to meditate and teach how to use some of the tenets of yoga, like the yama and the niyama and specific pranayama breath, so that people can integrate just a little bit of this into their lives, and perhaps it'll change their ways if they happen to be the violent, the perpetrator, or it can assuage them and help them heal from whatever it is. One of the things that struck me recently, I was reading an article by Reverend Al Sharpton, and he had cataloged all the mothers who had lost children to gun violence, like Trayvon Martin and Tamir Rice. And he was talking about how powerful they were. Oh, it was this past Mother's Day. And he was telling their story and talking about how they created this. They did this foundation. They created this. They went out and they reached out and did this. Nowhere in the article did he talk about how they took care of self. And I think that we're not taught, as I mentioned earlier, we're not taught that. But I think through yoga as a peace practice, we can reach these people, whether it's people who suffered at Sandy Hook or whatever, by bringing this to the cities and communities, people can learn how to be more self-reflective. And it's not that maybe there is some healing in creating a foundation in your child's name or something, but we want to teach other ways. So everything's not so exteriorized, but about self.
And this is so interesting because, you know, there's so much focus on the outer, and you've created things in the world, you know, through all your initiatives and your organizations and your school. You've put it out there. You're putting out this teaching. And yet it's all serving having a rich and somehow robust, connected inner life, out of which a person experiences, it sounds like, greater peace, greater joy. That's a really interesting balance to seek to strike. You know, I can think of people in my world who have been on a profound, you know, inner journey throughout their life. And it's about loving themselves, knowing themselves. You know, it's all about themselves, you know. And at some point, when is that navel gazing, or when is that narcissism because it doesn't express outer? Or is that enough because a person at peace, you know, is a world at peace versus those that are all, you know, focused on social justice and making a difference out there? It's like, it sounds like you're doing the and in both.
Yeah, I think that what we're trying to say through yoga as a peace practice is that, you know, we can offer suggestions for contemplating different practices. We can offer trainings to people so they can learn how to become still. And this nourishes the self, nourishes the spirit, and helps people heal from the trauma of violence. So, you know, The person who has spent a lifetime or many, many years studying self, they're generally people who have that kind of time and privilege. But many people out here are really hitting it hard. And, you know, the contemplative approach to life or going within is something that's more of a luxury. So what we're trying to do is reach, well, anybody really, even if someone's been going within for years, perhaps through the yoga as a peace practice, they can find a practice that they can share with others to help someone else cope with the aftermath. You know, so the focus is people who have been, I live in a community, and there's, I'm just saying, perhaps, I lived in a community where there's violence, and taking yoga as a peace practice or someone bringing it to me can teach me how to have more awareness of self, more ease with my breath, you know, a way to communicate and be in dialogue with others. When we did our last yoga as a peace practice training at Kripalu in July, one of the women who was in the training, who was a yoga teacher, said that she needed help sleeping because of the gun violence in her community and how it interfered with her life. Now, this was a teacher, but she lived in a community where there was much violence. Another woman stated that her difficulty, even though she's a teacher, her difficulty was that her son had been killed at her front, in the car, seated at her front door. Seated in a car at her front door is what I'm trying to say.
Yes, yes.
So, you know, so I think this is a an initiative where the time is now, because there is nothing helping people deal with the aftermath of violence. And so our objective is to take this to the cities where there's been violence and people are struggling to recover. For example, in South Carolina, where they recently had the church violence, that's one of our places where we would like to go to teach teachers, to teach social workers, to even teach police officers, if they'd like to join us, about a contemplative approach to yoga.
And this is such powerful work, because I'm hearing your grandmother as I'm listening to you.
You know, yes, you are.
I'm hearing love one another, take care of each other, afterwards. I feel like, and with all due respect to all men and male energy, that a lot of times it's about, well, what are we going to do to prevent this in the future? What is the policy change? What are going to be the rules of law? And yet, you make such a powerful point. Those who have suffered the violence are kind of left in the abyss of the trauma.
Absolutely.
And if we can bring the activism there, it speaks so much of what Gandhi suggested: be the change. You know, if you can bring peace to the mother whose son was shot in a car seat right outside the front door of the home, you know, if you can begin there, that is the rippling effects that I feel like really are the rippling effects that change the world.
Yeah, thank you. And, you know, one of the, with this being an initiative of the Black Yoga Teachers Alliance, you know, first and foremost, we're going to get Black teachers, and we've already started that, out teaching this practice in their communities.
Yeah.
You know, so, and we are not, it's not exclusive. We'll train anybody in any of the cities that we select. But I think it's the, it can become an antidote to what people are struggling with, which is the aftermath. And many people suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder because of violence. And, you know, violence takes many forms, you know. Gun violence is one thing, and police violence against Black people is one thing, but there's also violence in the home, and there's, I've heard so many stories, and just the two presentations that we've done to professionals, that it almost takes my breath away when I think about, you know, what I've heard that has happened in the home of the person who we think would have the most strength. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
So it's you're getting me fired up, Angela.
It causes me, you know, to pause. And so, you know, even as this is, you know, your peace initiative, your yoga as a peace practice, it comes as an initiative from your Black Yoga Teachers Alliance, right?
That's correct.
Right. And yet, anybody can come of any color, you're saying?
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm curious about this because for years and years and years, I've been using the term African-American, African-American, like I would never call anyone black, like I thought that was like what we don't do now. And yet you use that term freely, and it's like, I'm all confused. It's like, what am I supposed to say, you know,
yeah,
as a person who's, I guess I'm, you know, Caucasian. I'm a lot of things, but, you know, I appear whitish.
I think it really depends on the person, you know. Like, most black people are referred to as African American in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And then many more people are starting to say we're black and brown people. You know, I can't say what the correct thing is. I use both.
Yeah.
You know, I can say, oh, he's African American.
Yeah.
He's black. He's brown. You know, I don't think that's a thing to concern yourself with. You know, and if somebody speaks up to you and says, oh, we don't like being called that, it's like, okay, glad you told me.
Right, right, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. You can be falling all over yourself trying to use the right word, you know.
Yeah, it's too crazy, you know. Just
it really
people
is.
Say to you, please don't call me black. It's like, okay, I won't.
Right. So I'm thinking about, you know, these ideas are inspiring ideas. And, you know, I love this idea of being moved from within, listening to spirit, taking action. You know, how did you finance this? How did you have money to live as you did this? How did you design this life? Or I understand in a way it seems like it unfolded organically, but I want to know some of the nuts and bolts of how you've done it. You know, even having the confidence to, you know, to say, I'm creating this. I want to know how you financed it and what you would say to someone who maybe sits with their good ideas but doesn't take action. And how would you, what would you say to help someone move into action?
Well, the first thing I say to anyone who I'm talking to about like how to make it in the yoga world or I say don't quit your day job, you know. So anyone who wants to be led by spirit or go on a path, you still have to pay your rent and make sure that you have all that you need. So I've always been a professional woman before I got into yoga. So when I was first doing yoga, I was professionally employed and doing different types of work in human resources. And when I got into yoga more of as a full-time yogi, I developed the teacher training program, and that has been a mainstay for me, training and certifying teachers. So I started offering, and that was in 2002, I started offering yoga teacher trainings. And, you know, that's a pretty effective way to bring in an income if you're training teachers. And, you know, so I've been able to support myself, but, you know, I haven't let, oh, Lord, how can I do this? Like, I just sort of get out here and try. And, you know, with the yoga as a peace practice, we're seeking funding, but we've been lucky enough to get funding so we could offer several of those. And now we're preparing, because we are a nonprofit, we're seeking other funding.
Right.
You know, we're continually seeking funding. But I've been, you know, I raised my children and they all went to college and did very well, but I always had a job, if you know what I mean.
Well, what I'm hearing you say is do what you love, the money will follow, but don't depend on what you love to support you. Just do
it. Yeah, well, you got to be smart. You got to look at it and say, you know, well, can I'm making $80,000, so I'm just going to quit that. How am I going to live?
Right.
You know, so you have to build bridges and figure out how to sustain yourself, and then you can do the good.
Yes.
You know, I'm not one of those people who just said, I'm going out here and create this yoga retreat for women of color and think about it and talk to people, but I didn't have a job.
Right.
And you know what I mean? I had something I was doing. I can't even remember at the time. But, you know, I've been involved. I've consulted on national studies. I've written articles. I've just been finding a way to stay afloat, you know?
Yes.
And also, you know, you make a decision, you know, like, I mean, I could win the lottery or something. I don't play that often, but that would be a fabulous thing. But I like a simple life.
Yeah.
And I think that helps, you know, when you want to live simply and you're not striving, you know, for that, what is it? I heard someone had a 50,000 square foot home, mm-hmm. and one of the big stars. And you know, that's not my goal.
Right. Beautiful.
But I think the thing that I've been is practical, and I think people have to be practical as they move spirit and move to action. You're still, like, undergirding all that has to be a practical way of being so you don't hurt yourself.
That's powerful. And you know, I read that you feel that the studying yoga in India was a great inspiration, and that at that time, all those decades ago, you learned that everything is possible, and you still believe that is true today. I want to know why and how do you sustain that inspiration? And I'm going to add one more thing into this question. You know, you said you have three children, and one has passed. So I'm assuming that's been, you know, grief that you've experienced personally. How do you, through your own experience of personal grief, continue to serve the world as you do?
Well, I have to tell you that I lost my son. His name is Mark Fears. I called him Marco in 2011. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how to describe what I went through, but I had to be laid down. It was a terrible experience.
Mm.
And this, he didn't die from any, he died from a health issue. But what I did was I had to, like, break down and get back up.
Mm.
Like, I didn't try to say this wasn't the biggest thing I've ever experienced. Like, I just fell down. And then I had to use the things that we talk about in the yoga as a peace practice. I used that to knit myself back together.
Mm.
So there was this long pause when I was trying to get on my feet after my dear son passed away. You know, and that makes me really think, if I had to go through that, what I went through,
mm-hmm.
How do other people get up off the floor?
Yes.
You know, I was on the floor, I'm telling you, literally.
Yes.
You know, I could not move, I could barely breathe, and I knit myself back together over time with breath, with movement, with the love of those around me, you know, and just keeping at it. And so there was about a year that I was not really at my, you know, the way I am in the world. I had to really experience the grief, and it stopped me in my tracks, to tell the truth.
I'm so moved that, you know, one of the first things you say is you let yourself break. You had to lay yourself down. And I think so many people try not to allow that. And the whole idea that the heart breaks open, and you broke, and then you knitted yourself back together.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, it's probably a lifelong process of
course.
you know, massaging and knitting this so I can be. But, you know, I believed in the spirit, and I believe in, you know, for me it's God, and I asked for help, and it came through, you know. Slowly I was able to resume my life as it had been. And, you know, I don't know if I'm ever going to be the same. I don't think you could be.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, now I'm standing. I'm standing, and I'm being, and I'm doing, you know, and honoring my son, you know, through what I do. I had a dream the other night. It was so wonderful. And in my dream, I got up and looked out the window, and in my yard, there is no basketball court, but it looked like one, and my son was playing ball with his son.
Hmm.
And it was all a dream, you know, but mm-hmm. it nourished me so much just seeing him. I do have a grandson that he left, who is now, he's 9. And, you know, so, you know, that spirit will sustain you, because I think just these little visits with him when I get to see him, which is not often, you know, that nourishes me. That helps me, you know, tuck and gird myself and continue, you know.
And it's an example of you allowing yourself to be nourished by the unseen world. That world of spirit, that world of dreams, and you're able to take that which you gain from the unseen, be it the work you do connecting to your breath, and bring it into the world. As you're nourished, then you nourish others. The last question I want to ask you before we turn it over to Amit, and any other questions that anyone has, please, you know, we'll turn it over to Amit in a moment. But, you know, as Amit said, one of my passions is prayer. You know, having a, you know, I think of prayer as a practice, like yoga is a practice, meditation is a practice. But so many people think of prayer as only for the religious, and if they are not religious, they assume prayer is not for them. In the simplest way you can speak about it, and I read this in some of the articles written about you, that you believe that people need to be taught how to pray. How do you pray, and what does it give you for your work in the world?
Well, first I'll say I'm a praying woman.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I will pray in a minute, you know. I really will. And, you know, I just think it's very powerful. And then I've experienced, you know, relief. Like I prayed for help, you know, when my son died. I would wake up saying, Lord, help me. And then I'd be able to have to just stand up. You know what I mean? And I prayed for people, you know. I get emails and calls. Oh, can you pray for me? And like, yes. While I was in India, I studied prayer for 7 days with some priests. And they taught me different ways to approach prayer. And it's just simple, you know. You pray like God is your friend, or the spirit is your friend, or the spirit is your lover, or the spirit is your parents, or your mother, or your father. I mean, there's nothing fancy about prayer. It's just recognizing there is something greater, and that greater, whether it's God or Buddha or Gandhi or anybody, can help you through whatever it is that you're struggling with. But I believe prayer is very powerful. I learned to pray when I was very young. And, you know, prayer was something that we did in my family 3 times a day. When I was younger, we stopped and we prayed together. So I'm your girl for prayer.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, I heard someone say recently just the word help. And they said, you know, the acronym HELP, Hello Eternal Loving Presence. Like, help is a prayer in itself. And you've taught us a lot, Maya, in really mining the richness of your inner life, your dream life, your connection to spirit. And then from there, not only healing yourself, but bringing that opportunity for healing to the world through all your initiatives. And I think of that proverbial stone in the river and all the ripples. I mean, we can't even begin to calculate the ripples that have come from that within you that said yes. When you had that dream with your grandmother that said, be yourself and, you know, do your work with the strength that you are as a woman. So thank you so much. And Amit, I want to turn it over to you. I've so appreciated this opportunity to speak with you and share this conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And it's just beautiful just to be the fly on the wall is for all of us to listen to such a wonderful conversation. And for those of you that are on the call, if you do have a question for Maya, now's the time that you can ask it. You can push *6 on your phones, and then you'll be entered into a queue. And then we'll go caller by caller. And then you guys can ask Maya a question or share a reflection from today's call. And for those of you that are listening on the live stream, or for those of you that are feeling a little shy today, you can also email us at ask@servicespace.org. That's ask@servicespace.org. And we're happy to field questions. And, you know, just right off the bat, Maya, I wanted to share a couple of reflections that have already kind of come in. You know, one from Anna Dunwell, who says, you know, Maya was my yoga mentor. She inspired me to go into the African-American community to serve, and I'm grateful for her direction as I continue to seek to serve young women and men and older people, encouraging them to live in joy. And another similar reflection from Cecilia Nugent, who says, Maya is my yoga teacher and mentor. You're such an inspiration. I'm following your recent advice of Sthira Shukha, steadiness and ease, as I balance my family, full-time work and higher education, and part-time yoga outreach to the community of color that I serve. Thank you for the reminder. So beautiful, and it's you know, to hear, you know, how many, I'm sure there are countless number of people whose lives you've touched over the years, and so really appreciate you taking the time today to speak with us and to share about your life, your experiences. You know, one question that just had come up for me, and part of it's just my own personal curiosity. You know, growing up in the African American community, growing up in the Jewish community, what was it like for you to immerse yourself into the study of yoga in a small village in Gujarat, India? Different environment, different culture, food, everything. And you were there for 3 months, and I'm just curious what that was like for you to learn yoga, but then to be in a completely foreign environment in every respect, from a lifestyle, a perspective, you know, and the way people's perspectives are as well.
Oh, good question. Thank you, Amit. You know, it was exactly as you said. It was foreign. And I can remember when I first got to India, I was startled by the expanse of it, you know, how huge the airport was. And then once I was in a village, seeing the numbers of people that would be in one spot, you know, I mean, it's not like if I go out my door now, there's no one. You know, maybe one person walking down the street. I didn't have that experience in India. There were always people, large groups of people. And even though the village, Kaivarohan, is the place I was, and it's a very sacred place with a beautiful ashram, but I think it was the numbers of people that struck me. But then, you know, in India, I was trying to tell someone recently, the smell of India is absolutely magnificent because you have dung. When I said that, I thought they were going to fall out the chair. But the dung, the spices, the milk, the you know, because there's a lot of dairies near where I was, It's a magnificent smell. And so I immediately became intoxicated, you know. But I was there to practice and study. So, you know, I was able to live a yogi's lifestyle with, you know, before sunrise meditation and going to temple every day for chanting and doing yoga and having, you know, lectures from profound teachers. But it was a quiet time for me. You know, having raised, at that time my kids were older, but I hadn't been alone, and I was truly alone, and that was an interesting experience to not, like, discuss with anybody, well, what are you going to do now? What does that mean? Or look over there. Mm-hmm. I was truly alone. Not that I didn't have, you know, associates with me and people I knew, but I was alone, and I had never really been alone before. And that was the most fascinating thing. And, you know, I was able to have a few amazing experiences with spirit that I can't really talk about, but I had some experiences there that let me know that I was right in what I thought about yoga and how powerful it was. I love the people, the colors, the temples, especially the clothes were fabulous. Even the poorest people looked fabulous to me. And I visited homes. I really became a part of the village that I lived in.
Have you gone back since then?
I haven't, but, you know, I don't know that I'd have the strength. I mean, I was much younger, and it's quite an arduous task to be in India. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no fancy anything where I would go, where I was. So my daughter recently said, Ma, we should go to India. So maybe I will be going. But it was fascinating, and I'm so pleased that I got to do it.
That's wonderful. And now, you know, it was just listening to you throughout the call, thinking about, you know, yoga has just become such a part of our mainstream culture here, and there's so many different forms. There's so many people partake in it, whether it's a spiritual practice of reconnecting with a higher power, whether it's just a restorative practice for physical health or mental balance or just strength, flexibility, or just to try something new. But as a practitioner, and someone that has truly immersed herself in this, what's yoga come to mean for you personally?
Well, it really is, it's my life and my existence. You know, there is not a moment that I'm not connected to my sadhana. Sadhana is practice. So my sadhana happens when I wake up, because I'm conscious of who I am. So I live and breathe in yoga. You know, every piece of me has been impacted by the practice of yoga. You know, so my chest is lifted and my feet are firmly planted. I'm grounded. My heart is open. All of these things are me, but they've been impacted by stilling my mind and allowing myself to be aware of my breath. Because I do that in my daily life, I am yoga. Yoga is me.
You know, within sort of as an extension to this, you know, often within the service-based community, there's this tendency or lens toward creating inner transformation for ourselves and others. And I'm curious, you know, with yoga becoming so, you becoming yoga, and as you said, how has that transformed you in your other roles in life, you know, whether it's as a mother, a sister, a friend, even a community spiritual activist?
You know, I think that the thing that's been revealed to me is there were things that I knew about myself, and all of them can stay. You know, I can continue, like, to be practical and to be a friend to my friends and to be a lover to my husband and because I'm a householder, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I can still be myself. Like, I don't walk around like I am yoga and this, and I don't act like that. It's like I'm here. I'm of service, you know, in my community. I cook, I dance, I live life. But this is what we're supposed to do. You know what I mean? I think when you wake up, then you can be who you were supposed to be. I feel like I am me. You know, so I live full and rich, and you know, I think it's what has impacted me is the awareness, the practice of my breath, the study of yoga, and then the sadhana of living and, you know, looking at things with the lens of the sutras or the teaching. So everything is impacted by what I've come to know within.
Yeah.
But it hasn't made me strange or odd. That's what I'm trying to say.
Well, it certainly doesn't come off that way either. And then again, just as a quick reminder to all of our callers, if you do have a question, please feel free to push *6. You'll be entered into our queue, or email us at ask@servicespace.org. I am going to go to one of our callers right now.
Hi, my name is Kozo, and I'm calling from Cupertino. Maya, thank you so much for sharing this beautiful journey with us. I'm just feeling the spirit, put it that way. So thank you. I wanted to ask you a question. You mentioned about how when you first started bringing yoga into the Black community, that, you know, there was some resistance there. But I'm also wondering if, you know, I see you sitting in this space, this liminal space between these two communities that don't usually rub shoulders. And I'm wondering if you had resistance from the other side. And what I mean specifically is, like, you know, you talk a lot about, or just, you know, mention how your grandmother came back to you, or you talk a lot about spirit or connecting with spirit. And I'm wondering if that wasn't accepted in the yoga communities, you know, or you talk about the prayer that you do, it's kind of a different kind of prayer than yoga. So I'm wondering if your cultural background ever didn't mix with the yoga background.
Yeah, thank you. That's an interesting question. And, you know, it's interesting as I ponder it. You know, I have been a teacher at, you know, the major conferences, which are, you know, mostly 90% Caucasian. That's in, you know, the Omega Institute, as well as the Kripalu and the Yoga Journal Conference. And I found that being myself is easily accepted I don't know if it's still the dominant culture, in a Caucasian culture. And that people are receptive to my, the manner in which I teach, the way I couch the teachings with my personal experience and anecdotes. I didn't get any resistance to that. Hmm. You know, so I think that's very interesting that the resistance that I've received, which I don't receive today, came from trying to bring yoga into the Black community. And am I answering your question?
Yeah. It's interesting how, you know, there was resistance on one side and then the other side is acceptance. I'm just thinking about, when you mentioned your grandmother coming back to you, that's a big thing for Hawaiians, you know. Hawaiians,
yeah,
have our, what you know, we call our kapuna or amakua, and they come back to us, you know, even though they've passed many, many years ago. And I was just thinking about one of my Hawaiian elders who went to a Buddhist meditation retreat, and he said, oh, I'm having visions. My, you know, my grandfather came back, and, you know, the meditation teacher said, that's all illusion. Don't pay any attention to it, you know? And he's like, no, in my culture, that's not illusion. You know, when your grandmother comes back to you in a dream, that's real. That's, you know, the dream world is actually more real than the waking world. And so I'm just, you know, and then, you know, obviously prayers are different. And it seems to me the different prayers that you were raised with are different than the ones that you, you know, you practice in India.
Right, absolutely. Well, you know, it's really funny. My spirit's been open to all the prayers. Once I learned that, you know, there's a word, tat vat asi, I am that I am. And that same, those same three, I am that I am, three or four words, it's the same thing in my religion. I mean, in my, the way I was raised, it's like God says, I am that I am. And I'm in India studying, and they're saying, tat vat asi, I am that I am. I'm like, well, I am totally okay here. You know, I remember having that feeling. I'm okay here. All of this is good. Because I had moments where, like, what am I doing, you know? I'm a Jewish woman, black Jewish woman, and what am I doing here? And am I going to hurt myself, you know? But I'll tell you, the more I study, the more I learn that there is but one truth.
Yeah.
And that's how I'm living, you know. And, you know, if I do prayers, you know, I was just always myself. And if people said things, they never said them to me, you know, about the way I would chant or present things or, you know, do what I do, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm grateful for that. Yeah.
Thank you for being a vanguard in that. You know, thank you for being in that space that not too many people occupy. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome.
Thank you, Kozo. That was a fantastic little exchange there. I really appreciate it. And again, for anyone else that would like to ask a question or share a reflection, you can push *6 or email us at ask@servicespace.org. Maya, I had another question, you know, from what I've been hearing, you know, you've talking about the power of yoga, the power of breath, and I was curious about the role of the power of circles of sharing play in your retreats and gatherings, especially as it relate to the experience of women of color or just people of color, and you know, what it brings about in terms of yoga as healing.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yes. I started at my first retreat, in my mind, it was important that I have a circle. So I spoke with a good friend of mine. Her name is Strong Oak, and she's a Native American woman. And I decided that I wanted to have something that would support us, women of color, to speak our truth, because the circle is just not like a good time circle. It's a circle where we can stand in whatever it is that's come up, because by the time when I'm at these retreats, by the time I leave the circle, 24 hours has passed or maybe a little more, so people have shed some of their outer skin and things start to bubble up. So we actually use a Native American talking stick that gets passed around, and women share their truth. And I've experienced women just talking about everything, because I go out of my way to make sure it's a sacred, safe space. And I just think the circle is very powerful, and when you're in a circle with 100 women of color, it's like nothing I have ever experienced. And you know, the voices, we had one experience several years ago where the woman in the center of the circle just began to weep, and a woman in the outer circle began to go into some type of spasm or movement. I moved to the woman who was moving because I thought she was having a seizure. When she came out, she looked at the woman in the circle and began to speak to her. And it turned out that the woman in the circle, her family had been killed in a coup in, I don't know the country right now, but her family came through and gave this woman comfort through this woman who was sitting in the outer circle. So the circle experience with the work that I do has been very amazing. And I've seen people, you know, let go, release, get an emotional healing from being in the circle. So, you know, I use that talking stick just to give women permission and to give us the, you know, to set that standard. We are here to hear one another.
That's beautiful. Wow, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. You know, I guess one of the other things that I was curious about is, you know, along this journey, what sort of things have surprised you, you know, or what things that have been unexpected? I'm sure there have been a number of things, but that have just sort of really stood out, whether it's, you know, the way things have impacted you or the ripple effects that you've seen from your work, either in your retreats or you know, within the community, with the Black Yoga Teachers Alliance?
Well, I think, yes, one of the biggest, I don't know if it's big, but a surprise to me is the development in the Black communities of yoga teachers, how many people there are who are really educated, powerful teachers and are working all over the world, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's surprising to me that, you know, when I first started this journey, I didn't know what would be. But so this is really happening in my lifetime, you know, and I am an elder now in this community of Black yoga teachers. And that's very surprising to me, you know, that now there are people under me who are really flourishing and being supported and nourished by teachers like myself and Krishna Kaur and Jhana Long and Dr. Gail Parker. You know, we are the elders who are able to support them, the younger women and men. There's more men coming through. That's been surprising to me. You know, it's like it was a dream or a vision, and now I see it. You know, and I'm living it and a part of it. So that's, I don't know if that's the biggest thing, because I've seen so many things with people, you know, just growing and changing and, you know, allowing the spirit to be in their lives. And not settling for just a B flat life, you know, B flat. I'm a jazz singer, and B flat is sort of like just basic, you know. So, you know, that life that's like you go to work, you go home, and we're not gonna don't venture in. I've seen people go within and come out, and that is an astonishing thing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that we love to ask, I know we're getting sort of here close toward the end of our call, was how can we, as a larger service-based community, support you in your work?
Okay, that's a very good question. You know, I know that, I think that the service space is an organization that, you know, sort of weaves together ways to support without a lot of traditional funding or monies. So, you know, I think anyone who would like to lend a hand with what we're doing with the Black Yoga Teachers Alliance, we are really seeking someone who is savvy with social networking to support us. You know, in addition, of course, we're seeking funding so we can take the initiative to various cities in the United States. But people who have a special skill or acumen and they'd like to give us some time, that would be very amazing. You know, there's so many different things. I can't name all of our needs, but I know sure. Having someone help us with the social networking would be a boon to what we're trying to do.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that, and we will, find different ways to get the word out toward the greater community, and a call to hopefully that someone will step up to serve that need.
That'll be wonderful. And then anyone who wants to send us big checks will take them. We are a 501c3 nonprofit, so you'll be able to write your donation off, and it will go to a real good cause.
Wonderful. Angela, I wanted to just turn it to you for a minute to see if you had any closing thoughts or closing reflections before we move to our minute of gratitude.
Yeah, I just have one, and I've so enjoyed listening to your questions, Amit, and listening more and learning from you, Maya. And I'm just thinking about the state of the world today and, you know, all the things we see in the news. And what advice would you give, you know, people to remain centered and steadfast in their own service commitment through, various things that may, you know, be really, really shaking the world right now? What is your, how would you speak to that for everyone?
Okay, thank you. Now, I think the most important thing for everyone is to, my grandmother used to say, mark time, or hold the fort is another way to think of it. It's like, you know, the world is tumultuous right now, and the most important thing we can do is be still and have faith. You know, like, I know, I don't even want to name all the things that are happening in our world that are very upsetting, but I have such faith in God and to guide, you know, I mean, for me, I believe in the Lord and I trust in the Lord and I say, you know, what's going to happen? And then I take care of what I have to do because, you know, we could easily all drop the ball and just hide under the covers, but you know, that's not what I intend to do. I intend to continue with my work and ask that I be led, you know, that and I just trust God is looking out for this world and will help us somehow become stable again. And, you know, but everyone has to sort of get their feet in the dirt and breathe, you know, get out in the dirt. And that will ground you. And even if you don't call God, God, whatever you call him, you can just say, I trust Earth, or I trust God, or I trust Buddha, and breathe. And that's going to sustain us.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Really appreciate it. Angela, thank you for doing such a masterful job of moderating today. And Maya, really, really appreciate you sharing the personal stories and the insights. I know that we have had a lot of callers just really, really enjoyed hearing from you today. One of the things that we like to do at the end of each call is just to hold a collective minute of silence and gratitude. And then after that, we usually will open up the phone lines for a quick second and do a gratitude out loud of of thank you. And so if we can first start with and just do a minute of silence and gratitude, that'd be great.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to a recording of Awaken Calls. To access archives, visit us at www.awaken.org. And to get more involved, volunteer at www.servicespace.org.